going back to the rugby, the cup winning team in 1977-78, that was full of personalities. Any particular players that you pick out from that? Because I think it was the same 15 that played in every
round. Yes, rather unusually, the same 15 played in every round of the cup that year. Of course, there were great players to go through. Them might mean I might leave someone out, but certainly I remember the players like Peter Butler. How great was it to have a fullback of his, and not just his goal-kicking ability. People remember Butts as being a goal-kicker, but he was a fantastic running fullback, a great defender as well. And to have him at the back was just such a great reassurance to have him there as a match winner as well as a great all-round fullback. To have two wingers, Bob Clues and Richard Mogg. Moggy, of course, scored the only try there, but Bob Clues was a fantastic try-scoring winger for Gloucester, and I'm not sure exactly how many tries he scored. You'll know more than me, but to have two great wingers like that, and with Viner and Richard Jardine in the centre, who had played in all the other games leading up to that there, they were two great, solid centres. Chris Williams and Paul Howell. Peter Kingston didn't play in this game, but Paul Howell, another Lydney player who was hard as nails, he was just like another back row forward to have at the back of the scrum, who could tackle, pass and make breaks. So having Howler there was fantastic. The great Gordon Sargent, who sadly passed away recently. Steve Mills and, of course, Mike Burton in the front row. Another great Gloucester front row, which has been the foundation of so many winning performances. Because as we all know, even today, the front row is where, you know, your team is often based, and where having a great tight head, I've been told, is perhaps the most important player on the pitch. Then, of course, Steve Boyle and John Fiddler, who are responsible for the cauliflower ears I have as a number eight, packing down between those two monsters there, who would guarantee you line-out ball from the middle, and also, of course, around the park. Certainly, Steve Boyle was a great try-scoring lock forward for Gloucester. And then the back row, Gilly, Viv Woolley, and little old Simo, very lucky to play in that company. So, yes, it was a great team. We only won by what I tell people is actually a record score in an English Rugby Union Cup final. Chris, you might be interested in this. Did you know that was a record score in an English Rugby Union Cup final? It's the lowest ever score.
It's the lowest.
It's the lowest ever score. But guys, who cares? When history looks back, you don't look at the score, you look at the W next to it, you know? So I have that medal in my cupboard somewhere, and Leicester don't, so it doesn't bother me that it was the lowest score. We scored the only try of the game, and what I remember as well is not just the points we scored to win it, but was the tackle that Richard Mogg put in on Barker, their winger, in the dying moments of the game in the corner flag, because I was half a pace behind, and that's why. But Moggy got there first, and Moggy tackled him into the corner flag. And that was a certain try, and we would have lost 7-6. So I not only remember the try and the conversion from the touchline from Butts, but also Moggy's try-saving tackle, which was really what also won the game for us back then. It was one of the first big Rugby Union Cup finals, the first one sponsored by John Player, as you pointed out to me, John, and also supported by two passionate rugby clubs in Leicester and Gloucester. I think we had 25,000 there, which is small by today's standards, but by the standards back then, that was a big crowd for a cup final. And can you imagine a cigarette company sponsoring Rugby Union, which they did back then? Certainly wouldn't happen today. And in connection with sponsorship, just talking about sponsorship, which keeps the game alive today, we had shirts made by a company called Europa. They don't exist now. And their logo was a small anvil. I don't know why, but that was Europa Sports. And they had a little black anvil, which we had on our shirts. And before the game, Nigel Snarmer-Smith came in and said, "I'm sorry, gentlemen, this counts as advertising. And this game is going out on BBC. We can't have you advertising. I have some black electrical tape here. I want you to tape over the logo on your shirts." Which we did, but of course, as soon as he left the room, Burton said, "Gentlemen, we're being paid a lot of money to wear these shirts. I'd like you all to rip that tape off now." And we played the game with no tape covering the logos, and of course, they couldn't do anything about it because the game had to go. And of course, did it matter? who's going to see the tiny logo on the shirt? Contrast it with these days when players are walking billboards for the companies that sponsor rugby union, not just on their shirts, but on their shorts, as you pointed out.
Two other players who, one who was getting towards the end of his career at your time, and another one just coming through. I'm thinking of Keith Richardson,
yes,
for one, and then Phil Blakeway,
indeed,
for another.
Yes. Yes, I remember them both fondly. Keith, of course, was a teacher, and I now live a mile from him. I live in Standish near Stonehouse, and Keith taught at Wycliffe College, and retired now. I often see him in his flip-flops wandering around Stonehouse. Keith was another of the great front row forwards for Gloucester, as of course was the legendary Phil Blakeway. Gloucester was blessed back then with not only the front row forwards I've mentioned who were in that John Player team, but Phil Blakeway, of course, Keith Richardson, Tank Curran, Alan Brooks, good Lydney boy. And so front row forwards were in abundance then. And I certainly remember Keith. Keith captained the Gloucester team a couple of times when I was playing, and the United team, and was a hard Geordie. I hope he was a Geordie.
He was indeed.
A northeasterner, yes, certainly.
He was a Geordie.
And a good, tough, tough Gloucester forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so I certainly remember Keith.
And he was quick, wasn't he? He was converted number 8.
Yeah. He was indeed, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Keith was a good running, handling front row forward, which were rare in those days.
Yes. Mm.
And of course, Phil Blakeway. I can remember training with Phil, and we used to do training exercises one-on-one, where you'd have to scrummage one-on-one against the other person. And I remember scrummaging against Phil, and I thought, oh my God, I'm just so glad I don't play in the front row. And I sort of felt a bit sorry sometimes for some of the opponents who must have come up against Phil, who was such a hard man, you know, played with a broken neck, as legend has it. And sadly, his career was ended by injury. But yes, he was a great front row forward.
And yeah, formidably fit.
From?
Formidably fit. Despite, I mean, the injuries that he took, he was formidably fit on the field, wasn't he?
Yes. Didn't he used to work in a fruit and veg business? He used to carry sacks of spuds around and then used to go running and training with Teague. I believe he and him used to go running in the Forest of Dean, even long after Phil had given up. And I've seen Phil recently, sadly at Sarge's funeral, and Phil looks as fit as anything now. He still has that triangular shape,
yes,
the big shoulders and the narrow waist, and good on him, because yeah, most of our triangular shapes are now the other way up.
Yeah, we interviewed Phil.
You've interviewed, I must listen into that interview then, yes.
Yes, it's enlightening.
Okay, okay, yeah.
And two more back row forwards, John Orwin, Paul Wood.
John Orwin was one of the forwards who could play back row and second row. Now, I remember John mainly as a second row forward, and I remember playing with John on many occasions as a good front jumper. He wasn't a particularly tall second row, which is probably why he played in the back row as well, but very mobile for a big man, in the same kind of mould as Boyley almost. And what a mobile second row that was, because I often played with Boyley and John Orwin. John, of course, went on and captained England, and no doubt you'd know that. That's a good quiz question, that. Gloucester forwards who have captained England, and certainly John Orwin was one of those. I remember playing in the last game that John played with me, when he had a very serious injury towards the end of my last season, and he broke his upper arm, I believe, his humerus, making a break on hard grounds, was tackled and went down in his arm.
I think that was at King's Hill, wasn't it?
It was at King's Hill. It was down here by the clock. I remember it right now, because he went down and it was a nasty break.
I can remember it.
Over by the clock.
Yeah.
John, and who was the other one?
Paul Wood.
Woody, absolutely. Good Gloucester boy. Woody was a great forward in the kneel back mode, I would say. Small, not a big man, but a great mobile back row forward. I mean, there are many, I don't want to go through lots of names that I remember then, but certainly Woody would feature right up there. We haven't mentioned Hayner, because John Haynes was another great back row forward that I was honoured to play with. And I'm going to mention two more. Eddie Pinkney. Eddie and I often competed for back row positions. I only got in sometimes because I was a taller chap and I could win line-out ball. Eddie was a much more skillful player than me, with the ball in his hands, and a fantastic player. And the other Matson forward I want to mention is Malcolm Hayes, or Agsy. Do you know Agsy Hayes? Malcolm was also a great, good Gloucester boy, good back row forward to have on your team. I particularly remember those two.